And we've definitely been thinking globally, and we are about to get very, very local to a community health center here in Boston, and to, in particular, an acupuncture project. And one of our wonderful graduate students who just finished her MPH at BU School of Public Health, who worked on this same project a year ago, is with us. And Shariza, why don't you say hello to everyone? Some of her work is reflected in this data. Another one of her colleagues who is graduating this year, Ren Feng, worked on this with us this year. No important financial relationships to disclose, thank goodness. I work in a nonprofit acupuncture, Asian medicine clinical network that has a 24 history of providing free and low-cost care. And part of the reason we've been able to endure the last 24 years of poor funding, lack of support on many levels, is that we have so many community partnerships. We are right nearby. If any of you are in town longer and have a chance to go to Pathways to visit, I will personally arrange a red carpet tour for you. So our group is called Pathways to Wellness. We offer acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, and shiatsu. We are housed in a community health center called South End Community Health Center that primarily serves Latino Hispanic population, mostly from Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic. That is their specialty. They have probably about 10,000 patients in South End. We partnered with a managed care network that primarily helps to ensure people, the working poor, basically. So they're slightly above the poverty level, but not not having great financial resources. So that thinking about some kind of care that wasn't completely covered by the insurance that they have would probably not be realistic for them without this project. We started in 2006, and the focus was to evaluate clinical outcomes, member satisfaction with care, and costs. When we started out, this was going to be a one-year project. We are now 7.5 years into it. So we've got some great clinical outcomes to share with you today, some great satisfaction with care, and some hints about how much we can save. Close partnership with physicians who work at the health center, who refer their patients, who are members of the managed care program for acupuncture, for just these particular conditions: pain, headache or migraine, carpal tunnel, or menstrual or menopausal difficulties. Now you might say, well, what an interesting collection. You know, was that provided by the evidence or research? This was actually provided by the managed care company that was going to fund this. And they said, here's what we will allow you to do. And I think some of this, of course, did come from evidence-based medicine, and others was a little bit of a stretch. We were hoping, and we still are hoping, to be able to include working with people who have diabetes and chronic conditions, asthma. Certainly the acupuncture won't cure it, but it will help to manage it. So if members who are patients of the health center are interested in getting acupuncture for any of these conditions, they talk with their physician refers them, and they can get up to 20 treatments at no out-of-pocket cost. And in fact, some get reauthorized. So when they're living with chronic pain, chronic conditions, they don't have to limit themselves to just the 20 treatments. We're currently in our 7th year. And today we'll be presenting results just from the first 6 years. All of the patient forms, whether it's collection about information on how are you feeling today, how bad is your symptom, how long have you had it, how many medications you take, everything is bilingual in Spanish and English. And also our satisfaction forms are bilingual. And we have a number of bilingual acupuncturists who work on this. So our metrics. At our center, we actually have access to all of these data on clinical outcomes and evaluating satisfaction with care. All of the financial information comes from the managed care group, because they're the ones who are monitoring the purse strings. So we have a little bit less information about that, but we will get to that in a moment. So to evaluate the clinical outcomes, we have symptom-specific treatment sheets that contain validated questions about clinical parameters, such as, you know, how severe was your symptom, how frequent was it, how long did it last. We ask about members' ability to engage in activities of daily living, their medication use, and quality of life. And as any of you know who work with patients or clients, there's always a happy medium between everything you want to know, but what are people willing to disclose, and what can you reasonably get? And so I'm happy to say that for the most part, we have not had to tweak our questionnaires too much. We started out asking pretty much the right questions, and we've certainly refined them a bit, but we've been very pleased about that. And then we have a two-page questionnaire that is distributed at the completion of treatment that asks about, were you able to get an appointment in a reasonable time frame? I mean, did you have to wait a week or a month or anything like that? How much confidence and trust did you have in your acupuncturist? Were you treated with courtesy? How was the staff attitude? And so we get this information from everyone who completes it. I am always so enthusiastic about this slide, because for many years in my career, doing acupuncture in a public health context, the literature that we saw about who uses acupuncture, who uses CAM, indicates suburban, well-educated, nothing wrong with that, but just a small pocket of CAM users. And what we've been able to show by actually collecting these data, what people really are using acupuncture to deal with some of these chronic conditions. So in this sample of 560 people who came through, these are individuals who came through in the first 6 years of the project, almost half were Latino Hispanic, 30% were white, 18% were African American or black. Because our health center is a very small Asian population, that's not who we see. They have another health center down the road where they go. And then, a good, 60-some percent is based on either Hispanic, Latino, African American usage. And so partly what we've been able to see is that this is a very acceptable form of care for people. Of this cohort, average age is about 38 years. They range in age from 5 to 87 years. Like in other healthcare settings, 78% are female. The reason for referral, and in case you didn't get that the first time, here's the second little indication for it, 75%, basically three-quarters of these patients are referred because of musculoskeletal pain. And whether that's backache, whether that's pain from injuries to neck or legs or other extremities, pain is the number one reason. And that certainly is in accordance with why most people, at least in the U.S., use acupuncture. Another 16% are referred for headache, and then 6% for menstrual symptoms, and 2% each for the menopausal and carpal tunnel syndrome. So looking at the pain outcomes, we're going to kind of focus in here. We ask about what is your most severe level of pain, and then what is your average level of pain. These data are based on 378 individual patient members who received at least three treatments. So if someone just came in once or twice, we didn't really say, well, acupuncture could do this or that. But if people came in for at least three treatments, we use a pain scale from 0 to 10 that looks at severity and level of pain. And the most severe pain decreased by 1.2 points. Now, that is certainly clinically significant, and it's highly statistically significant as well. So we did paired t-tests on these. And so each individual was their own control. So we looked at baseline versus last treatment. The average level of pain decreased by over 2 points on the average. Again, highly significant. There was a reduction in pain frequency, duration. We asked one question about overall health. That's an indicator of quality of life. Again, a very high level of significance, both in the clinic and from a statistical point of view. And one interesting kind of economic note, the number of days in a week that someone is affected by pain, there was a reduction by half a day. So this was, you know, going to school, going to work, managing your household. What kind of changes do you note in how much more effective you can be and because of your decrease in pain? So there was a very important decrease in that as well. And then some of the activities of daily living. How much does your pain affect your mood and your ability to walk or move about, your sleep, your work, your recreation, enjoyment of life? And, you know, as any of you know who are clinicians or who have studied any aspects related to pain, pain is a constellation of symptoms. You know, it's not just like, oh, I have this little backache here. But when I start to have that chronically, that bleeds over into every other aspect of my life. So my ability to get together with friends, to have social connection, how much do I enjoy my life? So, you know, we all wish for good health and longevity for everyone. But when people don't enjoy this, when they have to live with chronic conditions, life changes dramatically. And so to be able to see how much can we impact that, just with, on average, people got 15 treatments. It was quite exciting to see. Now, for the clinical outcomes on headaches, so this is for an N of 73. The most severe headache decreased by about 2.4 points. The average level of headache that people had to deal with decreased by a little over 2 points. Quality of life, as measured by the SF1, was improved. And we had clinical improvement in the frequency and duration of the headache, but it wasn't statistically significant. So everything went in the right direction, but maybe we didn't have the big enough numbers, maybe we had too modest of an effect to get statistical significance. But from a clinical perspective, the patients were very happy with their outcomes. For activities of daily living, for people who have headache as a chronic issue, fatigue improved. Sleep quality, not quite statistically significant, but certainly clinically important. Depression, irritability, and the need for headache medication. The important thing here, we really do have, we have a way to go on being fully integrated, but in the center, we're really able to have ongoing communication with providers of patients. So it's not as if we're saying, oh, you just throw out your medications and don't listen to your doctor or anything like that. No, no, no. We're part of a team. And the patient, of course, is the captain of that team. And so all of us are working together in a way so that we can have favorable clinical outcomes. This year was the first time we were actually able to get some statistical tests on the menstrual symptoms. So this was on 28 women. And so we looked at a number of conditions related to breast tenderness, swelling, edema, menstrual cramps, someone's mood, quality of life and overall health, and their levels of tension. So on some of these, you see, we have statistical significance. Some we have just clinical significance. But believe me, if you are one of these women living day in and day out for sometimes up to a couple weeks a month with some of these symptoms, having this reduction, even if it wasn't statistically significant, was an important contributor to your quality of life. And then because we only had 11 women who completed the acupuncture related to menopausal symptoms, we had improvements. Too small sample. I didn't really want to do statistical testing on it, but I wanted to give you an idea that memory, joint pain, sleep, someone's ability to concentrate, level of anxiety, hot flashes and sweats, all improved. So that was very heartening to us. And again, with carpal tunnel syndrome, 11 patients. We didn't do statistical tests, but we wanted to give you, thank you, just an idea of how much things changed. So symptoms, tingling, this strange kinesia issue, being able to hold a book or do your chores at home, grasping something improved, less pain at night, greater ability to write. Statistically, you know, too small a sample, too small a difference. We're not going to do that. But we hope to keep collecting this. Satisfaction with care. We had 331 people over the 6 years so far complete this survey. 100%. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You know, I had to take all of this with a grain of salt, and you know, because I don't want to be accused of cooking these data. But really, this is what people are reporting. People are very confident and trusting in their acupuncturists. 99% reporting getting answers they can understand. So by getting answers you can understand creates communication, and that creates better a better environment for clinical work doing together. 95% said they would refer their family or friends. And now, we need a drum roll with this. This is based only on year one. The managed care company has been doing a lot and trying to survive, and we keep saying, can't you give us more recent data? Well, you know, we can't. But they've been funding this for 7.5 years. So if they are losing money, they have really somebody who's asleep at the wheel who keeps funding it, because they are really crazy. Basically, from the first year, there were two fiscal contributors to why to do this. One was that, on average, per member, the managed care company was saving $43 per member per month. You know, that might not sound a lot, but when you start looking at 500 people, 1,000 people, that adds up, and it makes real cash. The other interesting factor that the managed care company found out is that those members who had access to acupuncture stayed with the managed care company. So when it was time to change every year, you get there's a little window of time, and you can say, oh yeah, I don't like this managed care, I'm going to switch over here. All the folks who had acupuncture said, we like this, we want to stay with you. And that was a tremendous vote of confidence. But you can see what the managed care company did with these data, and I can't say I did this at all. They looked at the same members, collective cost for 6 months before they were getting the acupuncture, and then 6 months after. The reduction in cost resulted from fewer visits to the emergency room. Pain is one of the number one reason that brings people to the ER. So if we can control it in some innovative, lower cost ways, that's good for everybody. The other is that patients didn't need consultations with more expensive physicians. Now, we don't want to say no one should ever get that. Of course not. Sometimes people will need it, but sometimes it is not necessary. So this is kind of a way to triage that. So these preliminary results suggest acupuncture can be effective and acceptable treatment for pain and headache. Indications that cost savings may be associated with this form of treatment. It's a drug-free approach. This is very desirable. There's no medication side effects, no cross-reactions with other pharmaceuticals. We see many people who are in recovery from drug and alcohol use. The last thing they want is more oxycodone to tempt them and go back to that lifestyle. Finally, I want to thank all the staff and clients at South End Health Center that made this possible, our staff and clients at the acupuncture clinic, Pathways to Wellness, and our managed care partners. And we are very lucky to have Shariza with us today. So I thank you for your attention. And now, welcome to questions for all of us. Thank you. Yes, Prasad.
What did you define your severity of pain for both headache as well as
pain? We had a 0 to 10 scale.
Yeah, how much, how high it has to be severe?
Severe is like 7.5 plus. But actually, we just looked at the answers. We didn't put categories of how bad it was. We just had the linear scale. And it was very easy to use for patients, which was great to know. Yeah.
I have two questions. One is how are you paid by the managed care organization? And the other is, was treatment in individual rooms or a group of acupuncture
treatment? Sure. The acupuncture treatment was in individual rooms. We were paid by the managed care organization just like regular insurance reimbursement. So we would submit a bill on some regular schedule.
So fee for service?
Yes. And the good news, after January 1st, when the Affordable Care Act goes into effect, there are at least 5 managed care companies here in Massachusetts, Medicaid managed care companies, that will be covering acupuncture. That's a tremendous victory. That's not in every state. That's true. Yes. Question over here, and then we'll go over here. Yes.
When did you administer this care? And what were the points in which you, I know it was pre-treatment, and then you said that you just measured after they had 3 weeks.
When each patient first arrives, they fill in the form. So at baseline, before they've had treatment at all, and then the very last treatment, just before they have had that. So some people, on average, this group had about 15 acupuncture sessions, but they could get up to 20.
Okay, not just how you actually do, because we have an acupuncture clinic, but like a lot of chronic pain patients, there's never an end. You know, I mean, I was trying to.
Right, so what we said was an end was either when someone stopped or 20 treatments.
20,
yeah, because that was what the managed care company allowed us. Yes?
My question is for Ming Ming. What about in Africa? Did you look in that also?
That's an excellent question. This study did not report the results, but I personally have investigated Africa for other studies that I've done, and I have visited those countries. Can you tell me why? I mean, which countries you are interested in?
I was just interested in Africa at the time.
Okay. Africa is a very interesting.
I can't hear you.
Africa is a very interesting. Can you hear me now? Okay, good. Africa is a very interesting case because it really varies from region to region, but every big city, pretty much, in Africa, I was in Ethiopia, Kenya, the major pharmaceutical makers are herbal medicines. I was there, I think, a couple years ago. Acupuncture, yes. They have acupuncture clinics, and they have a lot of herbal clinics. And I was told, I was also in Northern Africa, Morocco, the big city, near the ocean, the capital. Casablanca, okay. Right. And yes, acupuncture, you pretty much can find acupuncture practitioners in every probably large city. I was more interested in Eastern Africa. Eastern Africa is a very interesting case because it has a lot of culture and tradition. Tanzania, we have a very large Indian population that brings with them the Ayurvedic tradition as well as other medicines from India. And Kenya has a lot of Chinese herbal doctors. And I was told South Africa, because of the large Chinese, early Chinese U.S. and Africa, but I was told that in the large cities where the Chinese government and the communities, they have sent their health care aid, you can find acupuncture. Actually, this is interesting because every development project that the Chinese government, as well as the local university, sent to Africa, have brought with them the acupuncture doctors. I mean, that's what I was told. But you can find a lot of acupuncture practitioners in North Africa as well as Kenya, yeah.
Oh, yes. It is.
There's a question for Dr. Nambiar as well as Dr. Wong, and secondly. When I look at the literature on herbal medicines, particularly Ayurvedic medicine in India 7 years ago, because of the environmental degradation that's been going on in India, there's been a tremendous amount of chemical contamination in the soil. And this is where the Ayurvedic medicine would actually be sort of taken out. So literature reviews of Ayurvedic medicine have actually shown chemical contamination widespread in the herbal medicines. Now, Ayurveda uses metals also in treatment, but the herbal medications have shown chemical contamination. So the question is, given the fact that so many people are using this, is there any government regulation to sort of look into the Ayurvedic chemical contamination issues? Because now we are poisoning people.
Well, there's been a very strong stand on the use of metals in Ayurvedic preparations, mm-hmm. and to what extent that will be covered under the public system. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the larger frame in which the issue is looked at, right? So materials that have gold and silver, for instance, in them are now no longer, for reasons of corruption actually, are now no longer covered by the public service. As it pertains to sort of adulteration and environmental degradation impacts on the herbal supply chain, to be quite frank, there's a complete lack of communication between the Ministry of Environment and Forestry and the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare on this. And actually, you know, through the supply chain, there are effects being seen among workers who are involved in the production chain, right? Getting exposures and things like that. And so actually it's the Ministry of Labour that's starting to look at this as an occupational health issue to begin with, whereas the actual impacts at the patient level are really quite invisible across ministries, I would say. There is some work, there are NGOs sort of trying to raise attention to this issue, and the groups that have been involved with the digital documentation and that kind of work have really been pushing for not just sort of descriptive work on cataloging herbal medications, but also understanding what's happening with them longitudinally over time and that kind of thing. But I would say a lot of those efforts are much more in the private not-for-profit sector. The private for-profit sector is just gung-ho, they're going right ahead. Because testing and sort of oversight of products is in a weak state right now. Regulation in general in India, as you may know, is quite weak. So the private sector is not really concerned with that. That's what it looks like, unfortunately.
And Dr. Wong, you know, so many people use medicine to be available.
Well, research, that's an excellent question, because we have to remember herbal medicines are useful for very important reasons, as they people believe. And they have less toxicity, and that's very important to have those herbal medicines. They have to grow. I mean, theoretical, idealistically, I mean, they have to grow in non-toxic environment. We have to bear that in mind. Okay. Now, what does research say? NGO, civil society. It's coming, I think. China has went through all that, you know, communication, toxic level, banned by the EU, but now it's a lot of emphasis from the community, civil society, preserving the environment. It's a very big thing. Although, when you have such high level industrialization, it's very, very risky for the herbals. But organic growing is now increasing. I see in Taiwan, China, and some productions move to those more clean countries. But I would say every environment, so that's an excellent question. I think that's something for ACH to be credible and useful. We have to make the herbals. So it's very standard.
There was one question right in the back.
Yeah,
you had your hand.
Yes. One is the greenhouse center, is it like a straight square or look alike? And then also my other question is about the physicians. Did you have to convince them to accept acupuncture or do any training, or what was their reaction to this?
Sure. It is the health center is in the process of becoming a federally qualified medical home. It's some more language that those of you on international level may just say, oh my gosh, more alphabet soup. But we did some educational presentations, informative sharing about what is acupuncture, you know, using sterile needles, only once, and all of that. And it has been quite effective. I think the physicians are very happy to get the assistance working with some people who have such chronic problems. Okay, press on. Oh, Dan.
Thank you. From your experience from working in the health system strengthening organization in India, and from working in this project, how do you see the future in terms of integration of the different kinds of medicine that are practiced in India in general?
Wow, that's a huge question. Well, you know, one of the things that's happening in India is that the idea of universal health coverage itself has to stick. So the states have to express an interest in broader health systems reform. And I have to say the funding allocation for health reform itself has been sort of humbling. It's not been very good. So the sort of TCAM and Ayush component of that is a minority within that. And the local health traditions work is a minority in that. So I would say that the one word answer to your question is that it will be ad hoc. Across states. I don't really picture a uniform strategy across states or even within one state. And I think that's fine. The Indian health system has been defined as a non-system. So we're sort of used to operating in that way. And then sort of celebrating little victories as they come along. What we've been interested in looking at is sort of the notion of local health traditions, which, as I said, is a minority within a number of minorities, and the idea of self-care in the framework of universal health coverage, and trying to sort of unpack and understand that idea more. So that's research that's sort of underway. The idea of implementation research itself, of speaking to providers and practitioners just about what's happening, rather than doing randomized controlled trials of different preparations and treatments, is now gaining currency in India. So I think as the evidence base or as the knowledge corpus around this set of issues grows and we are more creative in thinking about how you even understand this issue, I think there will be maybe more method to the ad hocness of how reform happens. And I would say overall, as is the case with most things that you say about India, is that there is no single rule, there is no one way that things will go. And so that's actually very exciting, because the contexts are so different, that wouldn't work anyway.
Exploring for your study to take us, how long did it take you? I did not know how many people and who are these people who are doing this for their interviews?
Okay, so we were a research team of six people, helped by an additional four or five people who are on my thank you slide. At PHFI, we're lucky in that we have Indian Institute for Public Health across the country. And so the lead researcher, so we would have one lead researcher in each state. I was the lead researcher for Delhi. And we had one research associate who was in all the states, making sure, you know, things sort of connected. And in each state, we developed our own strategy of who else would help. In the state of Meghalaya, we had something like four or five different languages we were operating in. So you see, there were a lot of names of people from the Northeast who had to help us with Khasi and Garo and the different local languages. In Delhi, I speak Hindi and Urdu, so we sort of managed with just one additional person. And so for each interview, we would have either two or three people going and speaking to the individual. And then we had two other people in our team of six, the sort of core group of six, who helped with sort of broader strokes analysis, logistical issues. You know, in health systems research, really, if you're meeting a health systems actor, you have to plan on the whole day going, because you'll get there, and at the time, you know, an hour before your appointment, and something like 4 or 5 hours later, you'll get 10 minutes. So you're spending the whole day just sort of twiddling your thumbs upside, and you know, in many cases, my research associate was actually just calming me down, because you know, it was just inordinate amounts of waiting. And so that's sort of how we did it. And in each site, the one additional person who was there would help with scheduling and sorting all of that out. So we really did have a lot of help.
Right. I think if we want to carry on our discussion, we may need to move out to do it in courtesy for the next folks who are starting to come. I want to thank you so much. These panelists have really made my day, and your questions and thoughtfulness and work have been incredible.